Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, wherever you are in the world. And welcome to Season 4 of Endurance Chat. Yes, we've been doing this now for 3 years. This is going to be our fourth year. Why are we doing this? I don't even know anymore. It's great, and I love it. And I love the fact that you guys want to listen to it, and it makes me very happy inside. Just to tie off last year, I do want to just quickly say a little bit of an apology for the lack of content towards the end of last year. We started off pretty strong, and especially around Le Mans, we were doing well. But as the year got on a bit, I started to sort of lose my way a little bit with my mental state and with my motivation and discipline for getting this done. And yeah, I do want to say a bit sorry about that. But we're back. Have a renewed sense of vigor and renewed sense of passion about doing this again. And we've got a few new things that are going to be coming along this year. Firstly, we're going to try a few travel episodes with myself and Kiwi going to some international events, or some international level events, I guess. I'm not going leaving the country yet. And we might even get some other people involved in that as well. We're also, I'm going to say this now, and this means it's going to happen. We're going to try and actually commit to doing commentary for one race this year. Maybe an ELMS race or an Asian Le Mans Series race, but we're going to try and get it to come together and to do it. And those are some of the ideas that we've got. If there's anything that you'd like us to try or anything you'd like to suggest to us, let us know, because that we want to try everything. We want to do everything that we can. And yeah, so thank you for being patient. Thank you for listening to us, and thank you for enjoying the ride so far. So the three seasons of it that we have. So to kick off season four, I want to introduce my co-host for today, or panelist for today, Cookie Monster FL. Welcome back.
Hello, Floodman.
We meet again for the last time.
The nemesis. Yeah, the nemesis. Another intimate hour. Yeah, dude. Thanks for another season back here. So I think it's not. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I think you're fine to have some time to yourself. All of us deal with mental issues. I don't think anybody goes around walking around the earth without having some slight, kind of gaffe or problem. So I think for everybody, taking care of themselves is first and foremost. So make sure you're kind of fully charged, let's say, and yep. And then you can give us better content. So
thank you,
man. Take the time you need, and yeah, we'll be here. So
thank you. I'm feeling good at the moment. Thank you very much. And I have taken that time, and I'm feeling good. And hopefully this stays going for this season. And I really want to commit to doing a bit of a better job this season, because if we do a bit of a better job this season, you know what's going to happen, Cookie?
We're going to get popular and meet all the girls.
I mean, there's that. But also, how many episodes have we put out per season, around about? If you had the ballpark.
20 or 30? Probably.
It's about 24, 25 per season. So okay. If we hit that number again this season, what do you reckon we're going to get to?
We're gonna get to 100, dude.
We're gonna get to 100 episodes. So we're gonna get to 100 episodes. That's the goal for this season. Okay, we're gonna get to 100 episodes.
I mean, we can. I mean, we. I
100 episodes, Cookie. I mean, we can.
Yes, I mean it's doable. Let's just throw that out there. With the Asian Le Mans series doing so much better than I think anybody thought 2 years ago. ELMS doing really well, IMSA doing really well. WC really is the only one that's not doing really well, but they only have, what, six calendar races next year? This year? Which I guess is a lot.
It's
seven?
Yeah, I guess.
That's plenty of meat on that plate there.
We do.
We're not even talking about 24-hour series, not talking about Bathurst, not talking about
Daytona,
you know,
as well. Mm-hmm. We're gonna have lots to talk about this year.
We can turn it.
Mm-hmm. But I just want to take a quick look back at last year, because that's something we didn't really do. And last year, I guess, was a bit of a tumultuous sort of season in sports cars around the world. I mean, you had the first half of the WEC Super Season, which only started in April with the prologue and May with the first event, which went straight to Le Mans. I'll be honest, I found it very difficult to keep on top of Blank Pan for the entire year as well. I just couldn't bring myself to find the time to get into it. Really, the shining light for me last year was IMSA and ELMS. Is that a fair enough statement? I think I had the most enjoyment watching those two series.
Yeah, I would say the top two series last year was definitely ELMS and IMSA, but there's a clear winner, though, I think.
I don't think it's close, right? Between.
No, IMSA. Get out of here. Get out of here, dude. ELMS is great. I think it had the parity that we wanted. I mean, I think IMSA also had the parity, but I think that was, you know, they caught lightning in a bottle, or essentially got the neutral point, you know, halfway through the season and rode on that fine line. Now, if they would have kept the regs this year, would that have been the same? Maybe not, but they were nice and competitive like ELMS was. But I mean, just the races, dude. I mean, I think if I had to have top 10 races, endurance races this year, about maybe four or five of them would go to IMSA.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, crazy. You can just rattle off every single race in the second half of the season for last year for IMSA. I'm talking Watkins Glen. I'm talking Road America. I'm talking VIR. I'm talking Petit Le Mans, Laguna Seca as well. There's five races right there, which were crackers. I mean, not all great, of course. Like, the first half of Laguna Seca was just a shit show. The first half of Petit Le Mans was pretty boring, but the way that they built up towards the finish were just amazing. And I think, you know, the fact that we had stories behind it, like, you know, Catherine Legg in GTD, the Ford versus Corvette in GT Pro, or GTLM rather, and then Core Overload in Prototype, like, that would have been phenomenal if that had happened.
Well, I mean, yeah, take even a step back, not even looking at who was competing for the championship, but just the fact that IMSA's championships went down to the last race. Mm. I mean, ELMS didn't, so you could even say from that aspect, IMSA just had a better season just simply from a competition aspect. So, but I loved ELMS. And I think, too, an answer for your Blanc Pain thing is that if Asian Mons Series, ELMS, IMSA, and WC continue to attract, like, eyeballs, I just don't know where Blanc Pain goes. I see Spa and Nürburgring 24 hours, both of those events obviously still being staples on the calendar. But, like, I mean, Blanc Pain, I feel like, or these GT spec series fill the gaps when some of these major series don't do well. And I just feel like it's the better product is when you have really a lot more closing or gap speeds, a lot more faster classes racing against slower cars. I feel like, I don't know.
I can understand that. Blank Pan to me felt a bit too homogenous throughout the year. It was like, you know, all the cars are the same pace. All the races sort of happen the same way. Even the 24 hours of Spa is kind of very regulated and regimented. So that's one of the reasons I found it more difficult to watch and be interested in last year. But in saying that, I've got to say that my favorite race of the entirety of last year was a Blank Pain race. So what do I know, right?
Well, okay. So what was that race then?
The 6 hours of Paul Ricard. That was my favorite race of last year.
Yeah. There was a lot of lead changes, a lot of drama.
Yeah, it was one of those races where no one wanted to win it because it just seemed that every single time a car got to the front, something happened to them.
Yeah, that was crazy. Mm. Yeah, that entire I'm remembering that race. Yeah, I might have to do that one.
Yeah,
I was tossing up for IMSA races, but that might kind of take it.
Oh, I reckon my top three would have to be the Blank Pan 6 hours of Paul Ricard, the Bathurst 12 hour minus the last 20 minutes. And, there's four IMSA races tied there. Probably the Watkins Glen 6 hour would be my next one.
Yeah, that bonkers, like,
all Road America. All Road America. The fuel runs at the end.
field runs at the end. Yeah, that was great. I mean, even though it was boring because of safety car. I mean, it was still accidents and stuff, but Laguna Seca was just somebody decided to go to tilt like everything on its end and then like just keep it there for the last hour and a half of the race. It was great.
It was pretty fun.
I'm laughing from that late race. I can't believe that race.
I can't believe it took so long to get started. I can't believe Core Autosport were able to get the amateur driver out of the car on the lead lap under safety car from the first safety car.
Stop it, dude. That's like an iRacing thing. I swear to God. Like, that would be like that. Like, I thought like he was like just trying to get out of the car because he had to hold the get out of car button for like 5 seconds. I thought he was trying to do that for a bit and couldn't do it.
That was hilarious. That was so funny. Oh, God damn it. See, but that's the thing. That's like one of those quintessential IMSA things where you wouldn't ever see it in any other championship because no other championship allows that to get to that point. Like, where else do you get less than a lap of green running for 45 minutes?
Amateurs, baby. Amateurs.
It wasn't amateurs, even the amateurs.
It wasn't. Which I want to also note, too. Yeah, who was driving the Red Dragon at the time? Who was...
It would have been... the two main drivers for that is, like, Steven Simpson and Misha Goikberg, right?
Or what was that? Are they for the banana boat?
I'm not sure. But was it the Red Dragon that messed it up? I thought it was the PR1 Matheson car.
Maybe I thought it was the Red Dragon that messed that up. Now what we're going to do is we're going to have to look this up and then, you know, not actually, you know, talk about the things we were supposed to talk about. So
Whoops.
Well, right. For clarity's sake, because all of us are a bunch of Redditors that want to one up and be like, actually, so, it was the Red Dragon.
It was actually the Red Dragon?
It was the Red Dragon, yeah.
Okay, let's go look this up. I'm looking this up.
So we're just going to take, all right, that's fine.
We're just taking a little segue.
See, this is where you put like the audio of that in, and then we were all like, oh.
So I've got the grid here, and you know what it doesn't tell me? It doesn't tell me the freaking driver on the grid. Mm-hmm. So the Red Dragon was, Misha Goikberg and Steven Simpson. The banana boat car was the other one, which was Simon Tremoune and Robert Alon. So I was right.
It was Misha Goikberg, dude. Isn't he an Am?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I was like, Baxter included that in his video, and I just I assumed, I was like, Baxter knows his stuff. There's no way that's a pro in there. That's got to be an Am. So that's why I said, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, good call. Speaking of Baxter's video, by the way, if you haven't seen it, you need to go and look up Baxter's YouTube channel, or just search through the sub for Prototype Challenge Part 2, because, man, that guy has got way too much time on his hands, and he uses it in the most glorious way, doesn't he?
I think he has just enough time on his hands, because if he had more, he'd make more content for us, because I would probably have to pay him, because it's great.
It's amazing.
It's great.
Anyway, we can't keep talking about Baxter. I'm sorry, but it'd be great. It'd be great. So we talked about... Yeah, so last year on the whole, the real saving graces were IMSA and ELMS. Just another thing on ELMS, 34 prototypes in a grid, and they're looking at 20 P2s for next year. Like, damn.
Yeah. Yep. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that because it's an LMP2.
I'm totally fine with that as well.
See, I got things. The IMSA thing irks me, but yeah, no, that 20, like that's well, we'll talk about that later in terms of what we're looking forward to because ELMS is 100% on my list for what I'm looking forward to in 2019.
Absolutely,
not to mention a few other things, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm super excited for that many prototypes.
It's gonna be crazy. It's gonna be like it's getting to the point where you're like, why does the ELMS have a GT championship? Because there is literally, 6 GT cars? And it's just, it's almost not worth having a race. But that's one of the things that I guess we can talk about, actually, is the GTE class outside of the WEC. Because if you think about it, at the moment, we have a great GTE Pro lineup where we've got, you know, two Porsches, two Ferraris, two Fords, two Aston Martins, two BMWs in WEC. And then, but because all those cars are so new, they haven't really been cycled into the customers yet. So the customers at the moment are choosing between the 488, the 911, the new 911, and the old Aston Martin. There's no Ford customer program. There's no new Aston Martin customer program yet. And the BMWs haven't been made and sold to customers yet, which means that in the GTE classes in the ELMS, there's just really not the capital in terms of cars to be able to run a lot of cars, and there's not the teams that are able to step into these cars. So at the ELMS at the moment is three Ferraris and three Porsches. So do we see those GT grids growing at all? Is it possible?
I think we're just hitting the natural stalemate of designing a class of GT car that is specific to your series and only your series, really, realistically, outside of another one. And the only reason they have it is because you have it.
Yeah.
And then really only attracting, only wanting OEM support for that. And really the only way you're getting that support is by then going, them not selling chassis. Because I think if the ACO could, they would absolutely put a clause on there saying, hey, sell, to customer cars. I just think the OEMs are just flat out going, we know, like, we will join you. And because, you know, I think people look at this too and go, like, think the ACO just, you know, all of a sudden BMW just show up at their doorstep with like a lantern and an old town lantern and a scroll. And they just hand them the scroll going, we're going to join you. And, you know, like, or something like that. It's like, no, these are discussions and negotiations done by the organizers and whatnot with like the teams and the factories to try to get in this. And I'm sure part of that is, what are you looking for? How could we, you know, how are we going to,
you help know, me to help
et cetera,
you.
Et cetera.
Help me to help you, symbiotic relate. Help me to help you. Right. Help me to help you. So, help me to help you.
So it's like, for that, I think that's where the barrier is hitting here. Yeah. And I don't know where you go past that, because they just won't show up then, right? So, yeah.
And of course, the issue is, as you said, the only reason the ELMS has the GTE cars is because the WC has the GTE cars. And if there's not customers willing to step into those cars, then you can't really create a sales base that's sustainable. And I mean, Porsche kind of have the monopoly because they have customers already. They have Proton, they have Golf, they have EBI Motors. They have those customers already from their previous programs. But and of course Ferrari does as well. But, you know, Aston Martin, I think the only Aston Martin teams that exist are Beach Dean, TF Sport, and the Pedro Lamy team, or the AMR, which runs Pedro Lamy. But they're all in WEC now. They don't exist outside of the WEC. They're not back in ELMS competition. And so, yeah, we're at this weird point where the customers don't exist, or the cars don't exist for the customers to exist. It's really odd.
Right. It's missing a piece. There's a gap for a lot of teams. I mean, and I think it's GT3. I mean, I think a lot of it is the costs are rising for GT3, and we might see that tilting point where teams that are racing in GT3 championships or competing in different series that run GT3 cars with all these Evo kits and all this stuff. Although, granted, we are seeing cost cut, you know, savings in GT3. It might get to that point where they might tilt to GTE. I just think that cost control needs to happen in GTE as well. Yep. If you're going to have this class exist, really, that is basically sole ACO and nothing really else, and it's not running really in anything else that, you know, by its own, you know, for, I guess, or by its own merit, I guess, that isn't relying on Le Mans to kind of keep it there because that's the only GT car that's permitted to race there.
Yeah.
Then, you know, we're just kind of stuck. So I just
I wonder,
bring GT4 in maybe.
I doubt we'll see GT4 on track with anything above GT LMP2 pace. Like, that's going to be ridiculous. I wonder if the Asian Le Mans series will do the same thing with the GT classes as they did with the P2 class and offer the opportunity for the old GTE cars, like the 458 or the old 911 or the current old-ish AMR, Aston Martin, to be run in their series as a separate class to the GT3. But then that's the thing. It's like, how do you put them... How do you reconcile the GT3s in with that as well? It's a weird... It's a very odd question. And I think there is a level of exclusivity which is good in saying that these are the only cars that get to race at Le Mans. But then on the flip side, you do kind of pigeonhole yourself once those programs come to their natural conclusion.
Right. And then, but then you also have OEMs who, you know, are now, you know, before the ability for them to race was, you know, was higher of a priority than exclusivity of a brand or a make or just a car itself. You don't want your tech going to somebody else. You don't want your brand. You want your brand staying as corporate, you know, centerline as possible. You don't want like a Walken Horst buying a BMW GTE, right? Or not only beating you, but maybe, you know, finishing well or beating you once, but then also having like, you know, non-corporate messaging. So it might have some sponsor that you don't want on there, someone like that on their car. And
you might put it in a video clip that is unsavory.
Right. Well, I mean,
Or talk with Motorsport. Oh,
I was like, that almost whooshed me for a bit. And I was like, oh, now I know where he's going with that.
Yeah.
But right. But so all these stipulations and clauses are now coming into all these like contracts of cars entering championships. So, which have never really happened before that we're now having to deal with that too. So, I mean, I just think you cheapen the cost, make it almost impossible for some of these OEMs to just say no to, okay, it's really cheap, but you have to, you know, for every factory car you have to sell a customer car or something like that. And then it's like,
how many of them do you reckon will be on board?
Well, I mean, so,
let's count them out.
Porsche, yes.
Will definitely be on board.
Ferrari? Aston Martin, yes. Well, Ferrari, ask me in like 6 months.
Okay.
If they've got a car program, yes.
If they don't?
Then it's same old Ferrari and no.
Oh, okay. Aston Martin, you reckon we'll yes. be able, down for selling customer cars?
Yes.
BMW?
No.
Corvette?
To do WC, they would probably not do that. They would join WC, I think, if it's just factory only.
Yep. And Ford, I reckon, is a pretty easy one.
No.
Yep. So the Corvette one is a really interesting one for me because they've only ever sold two cars. They've made five. There's the two GT Lam cars, one spare, one that they sold to Team AAI, I think it was called.
Yep.
Which was a Asian Le Mans series team, and then one that they sold to Labra. And I think that's all of them.
I think you're right.
Hmm.
You'd have to rely on new manufacturers coming in to stir the pot a bit, and they would have to also agree to that too, which, you know,
we'll see.
Have to cost control. You'd have to have major cost control to be like, okay, why would you not join this anyway? Who cares? You can make it for cheap.
We'll talk a little bit about that later because we did get some awesomely big news during the week that I want to talk about. But I actually want to have a bit of a discussion about the 2018 season on the whole for the WEC specifically, but also just a grander view of sports cars. And the question I want to pose is to you is, was the 2018 season overregulated?
Yes.
Okay, I agree, but why?
I think we'll look back at 2018 was when we, you know, when some series sniffed success and then just like decided to just eat the whole thing, you know, instead of slowly, you know, taking their time. Whereas others, I think, overthought things or just kind of used too many simulations to try to come up with a delta and clearly didn't add all of the pieces together before they plugged them all into the equation and got to that delta. So, yeah, I mean, there's probably one or two series that I think were fine with regulations this year.
Are you brave enough to point them out?
Let's see. The governing body for Bathurst 12-hour was pretty good. The regulations for that I thought were okay. Whoever that is. Who is that?
I think that's CAMS with SRO support.
Okay.
So that's the Confederation of Australian Motorsport with SRO support.
I thought I want to say Nürburgring 24, but I thought there was some issue this year with
they lost a lot of time due to fog this year.
Yeah, but that's not up to them. That's up to nature.
Yeah, that's Nürburgring.
So I think that them too. I mean, Yellow Mess was pretty okay in terms of pacing. I mean, the Dallara was up to speed for the most part. Sort of. I mean, it's still clear that the Urich is the faster car.
I still but you can see the driver don't. License issue I still in that. Don't entirely buy that. I'm going to jump in here to go on a tangent. I still don't entirely buy that the Ereka is the best car because it's the best car. I think that the prevailing argument is that Ereka have a data monopoly. They have so many good teams in Erekas driving both the Michelin and the Dunlop tires, which means that they can improve their cars much better than any of the other marks, whether that be a Dallara or a Ligier or a Riley, which, let's be real here, the Riley's a shit. But the fact that there's one good, like one really top quality team that doesn't run an Oreca and they only run one tire and they don't really have the capability to get all that data themselves means that the Oreca always seems like it's a stronger car. That's my thought on that. Would you agree? Do you reckon that's fair enough?
Fair. I would say the Oreca 07 is just a neutral car. It's just much more neutral in anything high speed cornering, low speed cornering, high speed straights. Like it just is more neutral than the Ligier and Dallara. They have to go more on a knife edge than the Oreca does.
Yep, fair enough.
So, but yeah. So beyond that, I would say maybe driver the driver rating. Issue in ELMS still, so maybe that I would say was under-regulated in terms, but then, so yeah, but I'd say 2018, there was definitely a massive amount of over-regulation happening.
Yeah, and I want to point to Le Mans specifically to say Le Mans, they needed to do better. So they had regulated pit stops, like stint lengths for P1, and in GTE, they had minimum fuel times in GTE as well. So you had to be fueling for a certain amount of time. And then, of course, the zero flexibility and strategy options because you could fuel and do tires at the same time, which they've now rescinded, which is fantastic, which means that there's actual strategy at play because you can make the decision to not take tires and save 20 seconds in the pits and then have to suffer a stint on old tires, which... It, at Le Mans is possible to do, but you couldn't do that, which is... anyway.
Well, we're going back to your pit stops, Flint. Don't worry about it.
We're going back to old pit stops, which is great. And thank God as well, because I couldn't deal with another season of there being absolutely no thought in strategy. But anyway.
I'll just cross that off the notes. I was curious whether or not you thought going back to the old pit stops was good.
No.
I'm going to put a yes on that.
Sorry, yes. Very much the old pit stops are great. And then, of course, there was all the issues with EOT, not just at Le Mans, but throughout the entire season. And there was a lot to be angry about in the 2018 season, I think, if you're a sports car fan watching the WEC and IMSA for that matter. As I mentioned before, the Laguna Seca round, the cautions at that round and just in general in IMSA, I think still are just too long. Just so long. Even in Blank Pan, they do this weird thing in Blank Pan where they send out the full course yellow for a lap and then send out the safety car. It's just like, but why? But why have you done this?
Because half the time they'd probably send the safety car on the wrong grid spot and then they'd mess everything up.
Yeah, well, I mean, if there is 60 GT3 cars on track, you've got to make sure you get the right one. So, and then, of course, the driver ratings as well. I think in IMSA, there's this big thing at the moment talking about Madison Snow, the winner of the GTD class, the amateur winner of the GTD class, getting bumped up to gold, which means he can't defend his title and he's actually split with the team now because he's not good enough as a gold to be able to demand a professional seat, but he's too good as a silver to be an amateur. It's a really weird position to be in, I think. So yeah, there was a lot of weird to take in last year.
Yeah, I mean, we could sit in IMSA for a bit. I mean, I'd even say the over-regulation of splitting the prototype class was one of the bigger over-regulations of 20, because it's long-lasting. I mean, the over-regulations of the ACO and FIA for the WEC is that they have egg on their face and they're trying to even the pace out for the next couple of years before a new regulation hits that, you know, combines everything into one, you know, class essentially again, grandfathering in some of the LMP1s, privateers, I'm assuming, for 2020. But the new regs are splitting DPI and prototype, which maybe in 4 or 5 years might be a good thing, but or maybe in 4 or 5 years it's just DPI and GTLM and GTD, because it certainly doesn't seem like P2 is taking off anywhere in America right now. No. There's no interest to do it. There's no interest to run it. There's no reason to.
It's basically killed the class. The top contenders from P2 last year were Core Autosports, who now run the old Nissan Ligiers, the JDC Miller Motorsports, which now run customer Cadillacs, and they were really the only ones. And then the PR1 Matheson car, which, less said about that, the better.
Right. I just think... It frustrates me because for 2018, for me, it's just the year of the fans, specifically of like IMSA fans, and just having to just really slow, you know, crawl through molasses trying to explain things or just at least concepts to some specifically. Sorry, I don't. It was frustrating because from that aspect, it just doesn't make any sense. Some of the decisions that were made at IMSA in terms of just forward thinking for it, because yeah, there's not a lot of interest to go prototype racing outside of the top class in IMSA. And I think there's so many fans that just don't want to look at IMSA being like ELMS, but it's like ELMS outside of the factory supported P2 cars that have slight body modifications. And I'm like, it's the same thing. And there's just, you know, if there was a LMP2 alongside the current LMP2s in ELMS, who's going to jump into that car to race it? It's the same car, but just slightly slower. You'd want to just race. And again, I mean, there is a market for it, but not in this specific market that they're trying to race it in. Because they're not making enough money to be able to justify the cost, which was kind of the problem that they had in LMP2 and LMP1 and ALMS previously. And now it's just kind of continuing on because we now have OEM support. So...
It just seems like when manufacturers get involved, classes die.
Yeah, I mean, that tends to happen. I mean, it's cost control. I mean, but then that's the thing, though. We might see up to 3 new teams, you know, factories next year in DPI if all these rumors are going to come true. So
yeah, and what are those rumors? I reckon one of them is Hyundai, right?
Hyundai is in talks, yeah. Ford, I think, is the other one, and then Subaru.
Oh, Subaru. Subaru Ligier would make me very excited in some very special places.
a fizzling sensation behind the back of the...
Just absolutely 18-wheeling over here.
James May over here. Did how far off track did we get? Did we actually cover anything on our kind of rushy knows? Here from that. From
those who rants? Knows? Okay. We're just having a chat, right?
Right. It's intimate hour.
Yeah. So on that side, okay, DPI has a vested interest. We have what, three manufacturers in at the moment, three and a half if you count the Nissan, which is now dead, but still being run. And
well, I mean, it's technically still a Nissan. It's just ESM is no longer, and now the car or the team hosting the Nissan DPI is now Core.
Yeah. Well, right. That's actually really, really sad, the fact that ESM have closed their doors completely.
Yeah, I mean, but that's just how all this is going to go. I mean, it's never going to last itself. I mean, maybe, you know, like some of the NASCAR teams might live beyond the owner's, like, you know, life span, I guess, essentially. But that just doesn't happen in sports car racing. There's not a whole lot of teams that have just lived on beyond like the core guys that have started. And that's why, like, enjoy the last 20 years and probably the next 5 or 10 years of Corvette racing. Cause when those guys go, you know, especially the guys at the top, it might be a lot harder to find those Corvettes racing. Now, maybe they've set the standard because they've been doing it now almost for 25 years. It's just going to keep going, I'm 1000% okay with, but there might come a time where that just dies too. And it's just kind of, remember it. Maybe somebody brings the name back, but
You know what it does for me? It makes me respect the likes of Yost and Penske and Wayne Taylor a lot more. The fact that they've been able to make a business and a living out of this and maintain it for so long. I think that really just sort of shows how delicate the business side is and how those particular players are able to transcend just the racing part of it and turn it into a sustainable business. Which
that
means that
cool.
Yeah.
That and the cool bomb ass liveries.
Yes. And some bomb ass retro liveries as well that are coming out for the Daytona, the Roar, and the 24. But we'll get to that in a second. Just to round back to the WEC side, we are now only 18 months away from the beginning of the 2020-2021 season, which will have these new regulations. So, who have we got confirmed at this stage? There is only one, isn't there?
Toyota.
Have they actually confirmed anything?
I mean, not that technically, but they've committed essentially to racing in the new...
Okay, so we'll put them down. And then the other one, of course, that we have had actually confirmed 110% is Glickenhaus, which is wild.
Well, I mean, this is what the regs were supposed to attract. It was basically any, you know, a boutique manufacturer is, you know, because now all they need to do, he might put up 25% collateral in terms of the overall investment for the team. And it's a lot easier to sell the rest of 75% of the investment needed to race when it's only like 15, you know, million euro or something like that.
Instead of like 70 million euro.
Right, yeah, you know, because he can realistically go, here's the regs, here's where I think we can work them to our favor, here's where we should be competitive outright regardless, and here's where I think we have the advantage in literally winning this race for this much, instead of going, well, you need to spend 60 mil and we'll finish a lap behind the Audis.
Maybe.
Who's going to do that, right? Yeah. So, so I think that's where these regs really help bring these kind of boutique manufacturers into the limelight, because they can now find the funding kind of easier than none at all but from before, right? So I think that's great. Are really the only two. So we've heard good news from a few other ones and some surprising ones that I think we thought fell out of contention but are now back in.
It's a really surprising, interesting thing, because it looks like everyone wants to take it up in year two. They kind of want to see how it goes and then take it up in year two. So who have we heard rumors about? We've heard rumors about Ferrari. We've heard rumors about Aston Martin. Strong rumors about Aston Martin, in fact.
I think they would be the next one to confirm.
Yeah.
Unless another one could just all of a sudden goes, they make an announcement. I think the next one should be Aston Martin.
Ford, maybe? Are we saying yes on Ford?
No, Ford are going DPI.
I have heard that they have been at the meetings, though.
Yeah, they're going DPI.
I reckon I agree with you. BMW, looking at alternative fuels, have been loitering, as far as I'm aware.
2024. They might probably do a garage 60 or 56, whatever we call that now.
I'd love to actually see that happen. Hydrogen. Yeah, I'd love to see that actually happen and not just be forgotten. I'd love to see garage 56 or garage 60 actually happen again.
I mean, because I easily, I mean, this is not hard to imagine. The ACO for 2024 going hydrogen cell cars are like going to be P1 or something like that, or like its own class. And then maybe by closer to 2030, then we see like P1s being hydrogen cell, and then ACO just fully committing to alt energies for the top class, which I'm okay with, but yeah. I would not be surprised if that happens.
Well, okay. Seeing as you've made mention of that, what is the next iteration of LMP1 after this brand-based pseudo-spec sort of deal? Where do we go from here?
Yeah, I don't know. It depends on how popular this is. I mean, if we get Ferrari to do it, like, I don't know if the ACO is going to want to change that for a while.
I reckon I've got the answer. So the whole point of LMP1 is to push the development of new technologies, right? So when diesel engines were becoming vogue, diesel were favored. When hybrid engines were becoming vogue, hybrids were favored, and higher capacity hybrids were favored. Now, nothing's really in vogue. Cost cutting's in vogue, so we've gone to a more spec series. But the next thing I think will be in vogue and in fashion is zero emissions. Because in Europe specifically, you've got Paris and Barcelona, I think, or Madrid, which have said that they're going to have zero emission traffic cities. So I think Madrid have said that they, by 2030 or something like that, they're not going to allow any cars that emit carbon dioxide or greenhouse gases in the city at all. So
yeah, that's okay. That is definitely something to think about. Yeah.
Yeah. So if that's where technology is going to be pushed, then that's where car manufacturers are going to be developing. Which means that's where the ACO will probably look to design their regulations around. So zero emissions is my bet for the next prototype.
That's going to be tough. I mean, that's kind of getting almost into the realm of like, however you can get the car 24 hours and is relatively fast and up to speed, like you've pretty much climbed most of the mountain. Like beating everybody else is almost secondary. I feel like, because
well, isn't it? That's the point, right? That's why we have these competitions. That's why we have a class built around driving technology. You design the regulations such that you get something at the end of it which completes most of the goal. You know, diesel engine that burns efficiently at low revs and at high torque. That can run for 24 hours and break the distance record. You have high capacity hybrids that have novel regen ability, which can regenerate 8 megajoules of power over the course of a 3-minute lap and redeploy it to the point where you're saving 40% of the fuel that you were using 5 years ago. That's the point, right?
I mean, I guess, but I'm saying the hurdle that you're trying to take into taking what exists now and making it into something that is raceable and that fits into the deltas required of modern sports car racing is a little bit tougher with hydrogen fuels or with zero emission hydrogen fuels or whatever alt tech that ACO goes with compared to like a diesel emissions or hybrid, because that tech already exists in a capacity that is similar to what is required in racing. Obviously more performance parts and better manufacturing, whatever, but do we have hydrogen fuel cells capable of pushing out close to 500 horsepower or something like that, 550?
No,
and
not yet. Did we have 10 years ago, did we have hybrid power plants that were capable of putting out 500 horsepower?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, 2008 we had some stuff. I think
Oh
Curse
shit,
was
yes.
going to
That
come
was
out in
oh.
2010.
Yeah.
So, but no, I get your point, but it's still
And I
I
mean,
still think.
hydrogen cars exist. Electric powered cars exist. Electric powered sports cars exist. I mean, you look at the Tesla Roadster and the Koenigsegg Regera and Formula E. Like, this technology exists. But of course, the question is, how do we get that into an endurance aspect, which is where, of course, Le Mans comes in, right?
I'm just saying from a performance standpoint, can you get those cars to get to 500 some X horsepower consistently for 14 or so laps before you have to basically, eject the cell and insert a new cell or whatever the quick fuel
Well,
changing system was that they showed at Spa. That's where I think for me, that's where I say the hurdle is. It's not necessarily, I'm definitely, yeah, you're right though. Longevity is going to be a thing, but I think the performance gap needs to be met in 6 years, and I don't know if that's going to happen yet.
I mean, yeah, that's fair enough. And I'm not saying that it's going to be easy. I'm just saying that's probably where we're going to head. Because let's not forget, it was only 8 years ago when the 2011 Audi R18 was doing 10 laps to a tank at 3 minutes 25 per lap and pitting 5 times every 3 hours. So, baby steps. The pace of development is ridiculous at the moment. So we just need something to develop into.
Garage 56 hydrogen fuel cell entry will probably ease a lot of my concerns very quickly, but we just need to see something on the truck that is a Garage 56 entry. This is ridiculous.
I agree on all accounts. But another thing to not forget, it was only 2 years ago that we had the first zero emission lap of Le Mans with the Zeot RC, right? So
Right.
if
Yeah. Using like, yeah. But like, that's the thing though, too. I could, a car can do that.
but
Can
it did that in a race session, did that in a competitive session.
I? Yeah. But for one, yeah. No,
Yeah.
again, I get your point.
Yeah.
You got to do baby steps. So,
So
yeah.
if we extrapolate, right, and we say what the new regs are going to be in act from the 2024 season into the 2025 Le Mans, that's 10 years since the Zeot RC, right? So we're in the right time frame. This it could happen. That's still 5 or 6 years away. It
Yeah,
could
I
happen
suppose.
quickly.
I look at
You
the
just
Zeot
gotta
RC being,
believe. You just
I just see
gotta
it, but
believe.
I see those as different things, though. I
Yeah,
don't see
yeah.
it as being like the same thing. Like
Yeah.
hydrogen tech to me is something different than what the Zeot RC is, but the result is the same, I think,
Yeah.
right? With the zero emissions, which is what we're going for. Yeah. So, but BMW, I think, is going 2024 for hydrogen. Who else do we have that is interested for 2020? I think that's pretty much.
Koenigsegg have said things, but they don't really seem to
Officially,
mean
yes, but
anything.
you're McLaren potentially 2022, maybe. I mean, they might
Potentially,
jump in.
maybe. It's a ma I think for McLaren, it's a matter of what are we actually getting out of this. I think they're focusing more on their GT3 efforts with the new 720S, which doesn't look like a GT3 car. It looks like a GT1 Maserati.
It's gorgeous.
I mean, it's debatable.
Yeah, you don't like it, I
I
know,
pre
but I like it.
I prefer the 650S. To be honest, I prefer the 650S. The 650S just looks cleaner to me.
This is a fat boy. I like it.
It looks like a GT1 car. That's my problem with it. It doesn't look like a GT3 car. It looks like a GT1 and
I
drives like
want
a.
it as a die-cast, dude.
I
That
mean, I'm
looks.
not going to stop you. Get a diecast. We know an employee at McLaren. Just give him a call.
Bring him up.
Yeah, just give him a call.
He's
Or
probably at Papaya
just tweet at
Lounge.
him. Just be like, "Hey man, I want one of those diecasts."
Yeah, give me one of those die casts.
Yeah.
That next to the car, give me a picture. Yeah. Well, okay, so McLaren maybe, but yeah, they seem to be heavily focused on their GT3 and customer programs right now, so
What about Audi? What about Porsche?
no for both. I think until I don't know. I think Audi's out for a while until they probably go hydrogen. And they probably will jump back in because they're like, well, why not? Then we'll make a hydrogen Audi R8 Evo version 5, and then that'll be hydrogen. Right, and then that they'll bring it back. Porsche, I don't know. I think they'll be back like in 15 years or so, like they always do.
I think Porsche will be back when it's right for them to be back, yeah.
But then, see, that's the thing is what, because now when you talk about this stuff, you can't just talk about, okay, well, what, like, who's going to come in the next 2 to 3 years? Because, you know, usually some car manufacturers, that's like, you know, screw it, we're just going to go to Le Mans. So you're just talking about, okay, who's the next boardroom that's going to go bonkers and want to go to Le Mans? Now it's almost turned into like, what is the corporate outlook for the brand going to be in the next 5 to 10 years? Are they looking at alternative fuels? No, if not, then they're naturally aspirated. Not looking like they're going to do this. If they're like, that's literally what we're doing. Porsche, I don't know when they're going to join because they're naturally aspirated. They're not really looking at doing any alternative stuff outside of the hybrid technology for some of the racing stuff.
They're moving more towards turbocharged. The new base model 911, which if you look at that thing, looks gorgeous. Just a quick sidebar, booty shots on the new 911 should just always be marked not safe for work. Just oof. 100% oof. Anyway.
We'll get the automod on that.
100% oof. And I'm talking about the 992, the new road model, not the new RSR. Still also 100% oof. Anyway, the base model 911, for the first time, comes with a turbocharged engine. For the entire running of the 911, the base model has always been a naturally aspirated engine. They've gone down in size, down in capacity to, I think, a 3.2 litre or a 3.4 litre, which is lower than the 991, and they've got it turbocharged. So they're probably looking more towards what they got out of the WEC program, which was small capacity turbocharged hybrid engines. Which doesn't fit into alternative fuels.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So it's like, so for Porsche, I don't see them coming back. I mean, because I think that's where ACO is going to head. And I think maybe Porsche might be taking a pretty long hiatus from...
Porsche are traditionalists, if anything.
Right. They're definitely there for competition and sport. I just feel like it's going to take the company itself getting into hydrogen fuel cells or energies before it fits their now, you know, what they want to do and come back and do it. Because I have no doubt if it fits, it sits. They're going to come back to Le Mans. Like,
yeah.
It's just a matter of when are they going to do it and how it fits. But
Exactly right. But they've got a lot of success when they do come back. I mean, 3 out of 4 in the 4 seasons that they ran, right? Right?
I mean, I'm still just trying to get over the fact that I just inserted a meme into a discussion about sports car racing, and it kind of flowed pretty well, so...
One of us. Question for you about 2020. Who are you going to support, Toyota or Glickenhaus? Are you going to stick with your long-term support of Toyota, or are you going to go for the patriotic option?
What'll be is we'll have a Toyota flag up top and then a Glickenhaus flag below that.
Below it.
And then, you know, because I've already got like the whole, dude, I've got this whole thing planned out. I just need to get larger flags so I can be like the whole Japanese dude that's like, that's got the like the 30 by 40 foot flag. Like
40 foot flag.
Seriously, that's like, they're ridiculously huge.
Wow.
Like, okay. I would love to have one of those, but yeah.
Just make sure if you take it to Sebring that it doesn't float onto the track.
Well, dude, I have 2 Toyota flags, so I'm literally going to put both of them on, like, one. I have like an Extendo flagpole that goes like 12 feet. It's like literally one of the ones that they have that I think over in Japan or whatever, and I'm just going to be doing like the whole thing during the pace lap. So you guys have to be watching around turn 10 because you'll just see like, Toyota flags going up and down because I'm totally going to be doing that. Nice. I'm kind of thinking I should bring it to Daytona too just to troll everybody.
Dude, do it. Like, screw it. Who cares? Do it so that way when Mazda breaks the lap record, it's going to be even more painful.
Oh, yeah. Or I'll just get Fernando to like just wave at me or something like that. Like, have Senpai notice me.
Okay.
There you go. Another meme.
Well done.
I'm on a record breaking run here right
now. You're going on it. Speaking of Daytona and Ollie Jarvis and the Mazda, We had the Raw sessions recently. We'll do a full preview of the Daytona 24 hours, but I do want to briefly talk about the Mazda DPI at the hands of Ollie Jarvis breaking the Daytona International Speedway sports car circuit lap record ever in history. They broke it. I believe it is the Toyota, right? The All American Motors Toyota powered what was it? It's like the
All American Toyota Eagle Mark III.
That one, yeah. So they broke that lap record. Yeah.
That just came over me. I was like possessed all of a sudden. I just regurgitated that.
Inscribed into your brain.
Dude, well, there was a time that I could not remember the name of that car, and I literally just for some reason just like Dan Gurney's All American Racers Toyota Eagle Mark III. Like, I just started reading that because it's a long name. It's just Dan Gurney's All American Racers is a tough team name to write down. Imagine writing checks out for that team, right?
Yeah, it would just be ridiculous. You need like three checks before you actually get to the dollar amount.
This is check. Yeah, hold on. I got three checks coming, but there's only one of them will cash. So just don't worry about it. I just had to use space to write my name. But it's unofficial though, so it doesn't matter.
Okay, so this is the conversation that I wanted to have. What is the difference between this, Christopher Meese's record at Bathurst, the unofficial record at Bathurst, the first lap under a 2 minute, and the 919's 5 minute whatever it was at the Nordschleife? Why does it matter if it's official or not?
Because the Porsche is also not technically categorized as being under an officially sanctioned race event. There's two different categories for lap times, okay. I believe.
Yep.
But I would say for races, because the Nordschleife one is this, there's nothing else to compare it to. So it doesn't, you know, that one stands out more alone because there's, you know, there is no official race time for that specific class of car. Whereas, you know, Daytona, Le Mans, all those other ones, you're able to test the same racetrack with the same car, same spec that also races at the same, you know, later on that year, that, you know, that weekend, blah, blah, blah. So I think that is where some, you know, the more official lap time is much more respected in those circumstances because you naturally are.
So what you're saying is the Nordschleife is just special.
Nordschleife is special because literally it's too dangerous for prototypes or Formula One cars or P2 cars to drive on it. Like,
drive,
there's no other track
race
in the world.
Drive or race?
Race on it. Race on it. Race on it. There's no other track in the world that basically is like that, where it's, this is a racetrack, but these cars are too dangerous on it. Sorry.
Bathurst prototypes.
Yeah, Bathurst prototypes. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I'd love to see a prototype go around Macau just to throw that argument straight out the water.
Oh my god.
Did I just start something?
like an old Audi R18 where you can't like see like over the wheel wells or anything like that. You just like
imagine
them
going
straight
through
ahead.
What corner is that? Is it the hairpin? They've all got special names, which are kind of weird. But imagine trying to get around that hairpin in an Audi R18.
I mean, don't imagine it, but just, I mean, replace the accident that happened this year at that corner with an Audi R18. That photographer stand ain't there anymore.
Oof.
I think, ow. Actually, that car is probably not taken off that high either, but that's still like,
I don't know.
Those
I've seen
cars.
Some of those prototypes actually fly. Like, you remember Anthony Davidson at Le Mans 2012 when he got tagged by the Ferrari? Remember Mike Rockenfeller 2011? Remember Stefan Sarrazin in
eating enough member berries.
Peugeot?
Calm down, buddy.
You remember?
I mean, yeah, but those
Loic Duval?
Those were you had a lot of time to build up some launch angle. You know, like that one, you hit the curb at about like 20 meters later is the wall, so there wasn't probably enough time for him to get airborne, but still, that's like however many kilos of weight going straight at a wall. I mean, Al Menina knows it too well, so
yeah. Anyway.
Fun stuff, though.
Yeah, fun stuff. Anyway, back to the conversation we were having. Unofficial versus official lap records. I agree with your definition, actually. I actually posted that as a comment in the thread about the unofficial lap record. And I do think there is an important distinction to be made between the two. So the thing is, with this, it's not running entirely under the specified guidelines yet, because BOP hasn't been finalized. It's not a competition session. It's basically just testing. And you don't get lap records at test tracks, right? That's not something that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what it is. This was a test session. So when they come back and do it at qualifying for the actual 24, we'll go nuts. But in saying that, though, Mazda's looking scary.
I mean, I don't know. I think they will be competitive. Now, are they the best chassis? We have no idea. And I think the others, I think there's a few teams that rightly can be just as fast. I think Core will be fast too in some tracks, and they are, you know, we're just shaking down the car, and clearly their lap times represented it. They don't look competitive if you just base it on what raw results are. So I think this is too early to tell. But what Mazda said is that they were talking with IMSA, and we're like, we're gonna run it as hard as we want to. And I think for them, I think their logic is just that they want IMSA to know that this is the pace of their car, you know, and maybe to have IMSA feel more comfortable basing their BOP around maybe their car and what their car is doing than other ones, in terms of, okay, well, here's what this car is doing. What can we do maybe to peg that back a little bit? But because then you have the outright pace that's already there. You're just limiting it a little bit. You're always going to hit that pace, right? You're not like overextending to get to this delta. You're being, your delta's being pegged back. So I think maybe that's their strategy. And if that's the case, then we'll see. Because I mean, you know, that should net them a few wins this year. Like, they should absolutely win a race this year.
I'm thinking like 3 or 4. You would hope so. Absolutely. Just to round out what you were saying, the Core team were the slowest in qualifying, slower than some of the P2 teams, in fact. But that was with John Bennett behind the wheel and not Colin Brown or Romain Dumas or Loic Duval. So that's probably one of the reasons why. It was very much the Mazdas and the Acuras doing the business. And then a lot, it just seems like there's just a swelling of Cadillacs on that grid as well, which is a little scary.
They tripled their numbers if you don't count, VFR or what is it? The Spirit of Daytona, from effort from last year, considering they pretty much destroyed themselves. Pretty much killed themselves.
Just as a quick sidebar, by the way, Results.imsa.com, the live timing results from Alcamel on the IMSA series, actually has a replay of the live timing from the Raw, which is pretty cool.
Interesting.
I had not noticed that before, so that's really, really interesting.
I like that.
It's going to be cute. Are we brave enough to make predictions for the Raw at this stage, for the 24 at this stage? I think we leave it till next time.
we can leave that for next time, yeah. There's a lot of hype. A lot of hype, though.
There is a lot of hype. And the fact that we are seeing some different teams rise to the top, the fact that we're seeing these hero lap times on some, you know, actually good tires for a change, the fact that we're going to see a crazy good GTLM field and some crazy GTD runners. I am so excited to see some of the GTD cars as well. I'm talking like... Meyer Shank Acura, the all-female team. There's like three of my favorite female drivers in that car. There's Catherine Legg, Christina Nielsen, and Simona Di Silvestro, which has been racing in Australia the last 2 years. That's going to be a great car. That's almost going to be a race-winning car with those drivers.
I really, really am hoping like good things for that, for the car. Like, I really want them to be competitive, and they should be. I mean, like, it's a good car, and they... Didn't they win the qualifying session
for GTD? I'm just having a quick look. Yes, they did. They took it out by 2/500ths over the AM Vassar Sullivan, which is the new team running the Lexus, which is pretty cool.
There you go. So they got their pit selection. So hey, that's a good start. I mean, you know, this isn't like Daytona Oval where it's like, you know, where Danica Patrick gets the pole or something like that. You know, it's like, okay, well, I mean, how much of it is you just steering the car slightly to the left for like 50 seconds? It's the engine. It's the engineers. It's the mechanics. It's the shop people. Never mind. So this at least shows good pace and that they can clearly compete, and that Honda or that Acura, excuse me, NSX looks really good too. So I am really, really hopeful for that team.
I'm excited. Just in general, they're just a real element of hype around IMSA starting off the series like this, starting off the year like this. And of course, we've actually had some other news just around sports cars in general, not necessarily IMSA, that has also increased the hype. So one which is maybe less hype, if you're not Trevor Vasaurus and obsessed with tire data and chassis data, is the fact that the European Le Mans series is losing a team because United Autosports is actually stepping up into a full season WEC drive for 2019-2020. And this is the LMP3 champions from last year, which is Phil Hansen and Fittipaldi, Emerson Fittipaldi. Is it Emerson? Oh, sorry, Felipe Albuquerque. So that's pretty cool, because that means we'll finally have the full set. We'll have an Orica on Dunlops, an Orica on Michelin's, a Ligier on Dunlops, and now a Ligier on Michelin tires, which means that Trevor Vasaurus can get actual decent tire data. He was very excited about that in the thread. I'm not lying.
He'll be chuffed to bits for sure. Look at that. Little British thing there. CM cultured. Yes.
Well done. I'm so proud.
I'm really trying to derail it. Are we confirmed that they are losing a LMP2 slot in ELMS? I thought they said they were trying to keep everything as it was, and they're only looking to add, not.
I think I'm not sure. I think. Well, the thing is, the LMP3, they're driving LMP3 at the moment. So if they're stepping up into WEC in LMP2, I'm not sure how keen they're going to be running the LMP3 on the off weekends. So, I'm not sure. We'll see. We won't find out until later this season, of course. But I would be surprised if they ran both simultaneously. So, like, of course, the ELMS season is divided into two parts, like, before Le Mans and after Le Mans. So, I wonder if they don't run after Le Mans and only run WEC then.
Just trying to see if I could verify that. I can't. I can't find anything specifically on that. So yeah. I don't know.
It's weird.
Not sure. But yeah, it's really good to see more P2 in actually have a Ligier that will have some pretty good support with
yes.
It. Will be nice to see too.
Finally, a competitive Ligier in the WEC. Something we haven't seen since the old regulations for P2. It's been now, too long of Formula Orica.
Hopefully we get a Dallara as well. I know we have how many do we have right now?
We have one, which is the Racing Team Netherlands Dallara.
Yeah, hopefully. I just don't know if they stay on for next year too.
I would love to see High Class Autosports step up into LMP2 in WC. But I think the most likely, if any team is going to do it, is the Certilla Villorba Corsa car. But again, I don't really see any of the Dallara teams as top teams at the moment. That's the thing.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough call.
And because the Dallara just looks so pretty. It just looks so pretty. You know what my dream is, Cookie, with the Dallara?
What's your dream?
My dream is that KCMG buys a Dallara, puts number 47 in it and puts it in that old blue chrome livery from 2015, because by gosh, the Dallara looks like that old Orica 05. And if you put that KCMG livery on it, I reckon that might be just my favorite WC livery ever.
Right, it adds like plus 5 horsepower too, I hear.
Yeah, because chrome, it reflects, of course.
It conducts heat and...
Well, anyone in physics knows that solar cells work better by reflecting sun rays instead of absorbing them, because you actually get a bigger shift in momentum by reflecting a ray of light than by absorbing it. This is how you change direction on satellites, using solar cells. So, of course, chrome, being reflective, reflects sun rays better, which means it goes a measurable amount faster. I'm talking maybe picometers per second, but it's a measurable amount.
Okay. I'm with... Hold on, I just pulled out my slide rule. Give me a sec here.
you're going to measure the increase in speed on the slide rule?
No, I'm just going to modulate the turbo and cabulator.
Hey, at least what I was saying actually has physical basis.
I'm quoting the turbo and cabulator.
God damn it.
I love that video, dude. That's a great non-speak. Or no, I think that is like, is that a legit video?
I have actually no idea what you're talking about.
Oh man! All right. Well, this is bad for podcasts. But there's a video for with a guy that goes through a lot of complex words describing, I believe, some form of a motor, like a mechanical, or I don't know. It's something mechanical looking, and all the words used to describe this are just words that like are just defunct and just normal speak. It's just like just large words everywhere that are nonsensical.
So instead of explain like I'm five, it's more like explain like I have three PhDs.
Yes, exactly. And it's almost like an ad that you're being sold. And
I can't wait to be sold on slide rule physics. Sounds like the best time to spend a Sunday morning.
Endurance chat, everyone.
Aren't you glad we're back for a fourth season?
It's already off the rails. It is completely surrendered. We can hold on. All right, I'll bring it back. So then we also have news that we have Brabham's looking to join.
Oh my GTE. God!
I mean,
oh my God!
Oh, hold on, don't oh my God this too much. Remember, he also wanted to do P1. I think he wanted to do P2.
He tried to crash on P2, which didn't work. But still, no, I believe this can work. I can 100% believe this will work.
Okay. 100%. I love your optimism. I'm going to channel some of your optimism and not be pessimistic about this.
I have to be. This is the Australian in me coming out for the Aussie battler. Yes, he's a small manufacturer. He's going under the small volume manufacturer rules, and he's going to build a GTE car, and he's going to take down BMW and Ferrari and Porsche and Aston Martin and Ford, and we're going to win Le Mans, and Brabham's going to win Le Mans again, just like every single member of that family has won at Le Mans. So, yes, this is... So hype.
Yeah, and then you win $1 million, right?
Yes, that's exactly how that works.
Got it. All right, gotcha. All right, just want to verify. yeah. It would be nice to have another car that doesn't look like the current OEMs on the grid.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, definitely. And this is the first small volume, like, boutique manufacturer getting into the GTE since, like, Spyker in... 2000 and whoop whoop.
2007, I think.
I think it was 2007, 2008.
I believe that's when it. That was when that was. But yeah, I mean, we haven't. I think that is the last one to do that. It's odd though because, I feel like the barrier of entry is just greater in GTE Pro than it would be for like LMP2. I mean, but I guess, again, I get they're making cars. So they're,
So
they're in a business of designing and building and racing cars. So kind of want to do it in-house.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Yeah, because Brabham doesn't want to just, you know, manage a team. They want to build a car. I am currently trying to find a list of GT2 homologated cars or GTE homologated cars. And it is currently avoiding me, which is annoying. But because I remember I had a list somewhere. I'll find it later anyway. But yeah, there's only a few examples of boutique manufacturers really coming in and making like crazy cars to race at this sort of level. I think you can look at Pagani back in the day or of the early 2000s in the what became the American Le Mans series, and Spyker, the two ones that the only two that I really know of, and the fact that you have. Okay, for me, an Australian manufacturer whose test track is my local track, who has history at Le Mans with three winners in the family and have been trying to get to Le Mans for years and years and years, I don't think they're going to mess this up. That this is where my sort of mindset is at the moment. I don't think they're going to run into this and mess this up. So the fact that they've announced it, the fact that they've met the homologation requirements, okay, yes, the car isn't road legal. The Brabham BT62 isn't actually road legal. They do sell a road legal production package with the car that you can choose to buy, but it is a track car. But in saying all of this, they've met the requirements. For small manufacturers, it is only like 25 cars, and they're selling 70 of these. I've seen it in person. It looks terrifying and I love it. And on top of that, if they do get into the mix and they are successful, this does spread the seeds of the WEC looking to Australia to host a WEC event. And guess where the most appropriate place to hold a WEC event in Australia is?
That new track that just opened up.
The new track that just opened up, which is my local track, which is the Bend. And I'd love to marshal a WEC race. It would be my dream.
Yeah, you'd fangirl pretty hard.
Well,
you'd be professional as fuck, but I mean, you'd be fangirling pretty hard.
Yeah, I'd be so like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, that's Fernando Alonso. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, that's Kamui Kobayashi. Oh my god, that's Earl Bamber. Oh my god.
Like, it's not, you are not going to enjoy in like 3 weeks. And then you're really not going to enjoy, like, in March. It's not going to be enjoyable for you.
Why wouldn't it be enjoyable for me?
Because the IMSA FI WC packs will be, like, basically all along, like, with each other. And you basically just walk probably in between a bunch of, like, teams, FI and IMSA just meshed together with a bunch of, like, amazing drivers from everywhere.
Yeah. This is me at Bathurst. Like, I ran into Earl Bamber at Bathurst last year and literally like had a short circuit in my brain. I'm like, oh, you're Earl Bamber. Like, I was like, I can't compute being in the presence of someone who's won LMP1 at Le Mans. How did that feel? Was that cool? How do you like racing at Bathurst? Okay, I'm going to get your signature and run away before I make more of a fool of myself. Okay, bye.
I just shout the names of drivers as they walk or drive by, and then they turn around, look confused and kind of ticked off, and then turn back and look away. So
I haven't done that. Most of the time, the GT drivers in Australia are just impressed that someone knows about them. Like, I was in line for the Bentley signatures, and I, like, went up to each of one of them and, like, called them by their name. And then there was one guy, I couldn't figure out who it was. I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are. I can't figure it out. And it was, who was it now? I'm going to mess it up. See, now I've done a horrible, horrible
Renger
thing.
Renger van der Zander.
It wasn't Renger van der Zander. It was, shit.
Don't worry, guys.
It was Jules Gounon. That was it. He said to me, "Oh, I'm new to the team. I'm Jules Gounon." I'm like, "Oh, Jules Gounon, congratulations to your ADAC GT Championship last year." He's like, "Oh, thank you. You're the first person to say that to me." And so it's, for me, in Australia, it's very interesting seeing how much the international field appreciates our knowledge, the very few people who have that knowledge to be able to go, "I saw you win this championship last year. Congratulations," which is really cool. But yeah, if you get a WC paddock in there, I will literally just like have sensory overload and just kind of collapse in the middle of the pit lane. Is that bad?
I'll let you know in March.
Hey, if you end up running into Derek Bell in the shopping center again, I'm just going to just...
I'll be way less sunburned this time, so I look forward to that.
Good shit.
Yeah, I'll have to actually ask him a question.
Ooh. What are you going to ask him?
What skincare product does he use for my sunburn? Because I'm probably sunburned again.
Classic. Yeah. Cool. So I think we're getting towards the end. We've been talking for like 80 minutes.
Yeah, we pretty much butchered this run sheet, which I'm fine with.
It's just cut and paste, right? It's everywhere.
Yeah. I don't even know what's editable anymore.
It's not.
Didn't talk about that. One of RWC's regulars is going to be coming to Daytona 24. Yeah. I mean, there's a few regulars I think going to be showing up to Daytona 24, but one in particular that hails from your corner of the world.
Yes, indeed. You will have the privileged opportunity, and anyone else going to Daytona will have the privileged opportunity to meet one of the best exports from this corner of the world, Kiwi Chris 1709. Please keep him.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Daytona. Just like, and it might be like 30% could just be down at Kiwi's going to be there. So I'm excited.
Yeah, everyone who gets to Daytona, make sure you say hi to Kiwi. Interesting though, I mentioned at the very top of the show, he's actually going to be putting together a bit of a travel blog for us, recording his traveling experience to and from Daytona. And also, I'm not going to like pin this on you to do this, but I'm expecting that you guys are probably going to do a Daytona preview show at the track.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, man. That would be sick. It would be cool.
I've got my laptop and mic, so like we could literally just do like studio.
Nice.
like studio mics if we wanted to.
Yeah, better than the last time you tried at Road Atlanta, where you had the laptop pointed at the access road with motorbikes going past, backfiring, and being like, "Oh yeah, try and edit that out, please."
Well, that one was no. Well, we were just using, I think, phone, and yeah, we didn't have any other place to sit. Like, yeah, there was literally no other spot to sit. The road was, I kid you not, it was like
right there,
2 meters away, right. Yeah. So, and then people were just peeling out every like constantly. So yeah, that was not great. But no, I mean, we've got we stay at the house, so I mean, we can do it at the track or there. I mean, we've got, I'm bringing the laptop, I'm probably going to be bringing my sim racing stuff, so we'll probably try to get some video of
damn
pedaling wheels and stuff. I don't know, everybody's freaking out about, like, because I would want to just mount it to like a table, but I don't know if people would freak out about that. But and I got my projector too, so
well, so, we'll have, so what you're, we'll what you're saying is you're bringing your entire life to Daytona for a weekend.
Man, you know, I'm just trying to have some fun for a week, you know, that's all.
Sounds like a good life.
Yeah, so but then we'll do a podcast there, and
that'll be sick.
Do some videos.
Another interesting tidbit, which will be happening on my corner of the world, is, of course, the Bathurst 12L, which is the week after the Daytona 24, and I will be meeting up with people there, of course, as I always do, so I'll try and organize something on Twitter. I've met a few very awesome people already. I've met Stealth WEC last year or the year before. I'm going with Reddit's Worst Night again, the winner of the Fantasy WEC last year, which is awful because I got to take that throne back from him. which I'm never going to forgive him for that. And I met Grusso up on the mountain as well. And I will also be meeting for the first time another one of our fellow moderators. I'm actually going to be traveling to Bathurst with Lada Safety Car, our graphics guy on the podcast, and who does all the beautiful CSS work for the sub, as well as all of his other mod duties. So yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Should be boatloads of fun.
It should be. Fingers crossed. Yeah. Fingers, yeah. Arms, legs, toes, yeah. And eyes.
We have March too coming up, so that'll be fun for me too.
Yeah. Where are you going?
Otherwise, the poster came out, so
how cool does the Searing poster look?
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites by far.
You're gonna get it and hang it on your wall?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, it's going. Yeah, it's definitely gonna get framed. Nice. I don't usually buy posters. That one's going to the wall.
I'm pretty excited for you, not gonna lie. And finally, 2019 coming up. We've got a few cool things coming up this year, not in endurance chat, in terms of sports cars. What are you looking forward to most this year for sports cars?
The super season conclusion, just to get this over with, hopefully with a strong Le Mans for R&D wise for SMP and for Rebellion. Just really looking to see if those cars can just increase in any competition whatsoever. That includes the Sebring doubleheader. We'll see how successful that is or anything, just to see the results from that, because that's never been done before. Which then again correlates to privateer R&D testing. That'll be something to look forward to. I really want to see how much faster Rebellion and S&P get throughout the year in LMP1. The new sprint championship for IMSA, I'm looking forward to that. I want to see how that works, especially seeing some new cars and whatnot going to be competing exclusively in that series.
I'd completely forgotten about that, actually.
Yep. And then the expansion of ELMS, we're going to have 34 prototypes, and the continued support of Asian Le Mans series as it grows and then moves into modern LMP2 manufacturers at the end of 2019. Mm.
We had the third race of the Asian Le Mans series race earlier today / last night for you. Did you catch any of it at all?
I did not. I'm going to try it.
I won't spoil anything, but from the brief amount I got to watch, it looks like the quality has taken a significant step up this season. And I wonder how much of that is due to the fighting for Le Mans auto entries and getting, pardon me, more European talent in, and how much is the local talent really coming to the fore? Because it seems like it's a very even combination of both, which is really encouraging, in my opinion. But it did look like a really, really good race. And the Asian Le Mans series has come on in leaps and bounds, and not only in the on-track, but also the production quality. Of course, Graham Goodwin's basically running the show in terms of hosting over there, and he's been doing a fantastic job, and he's been loving it as well, which you can plainly see if you watch the broadcast or listen to him talk on This Week in Sports Cars. Give him a plug, because why not? And yeah, Asian Le Mans series, it does feel that summer, for me, gap in sports cars pretty nicely, even though I'm watching like 8 different other sports at the same time. For me, I'm really excited to see Bathurst, of course. Bathurst is the one big race I always get to every year because it's the big sports car race down under. I'm looking forward to marshalling more events. I've actually cleared out a bit more of my schedule, looking to marshal some more club-level events. And hopefully, fingers crossed, I am actually going to be meeting you as well. Have I told you about this? I'm pretty sure I've told you about this.
Yeah, you're trying to get to Petite, right?
That is the plan. I want to be at Petite. Screw Bathurst. Screw the 1000. I'm going to be at Petite.
I mean, that should be a great ending to the season. That's for sure.
I'm really excited.
Championship fight.
Yeah.
Mike might be actually really happy for the first time, like leaving the racetrack, as Mazda might actually win.
Mazda things. Win? Please.
Yeah. Dude, as of 2019, Mazda has still not won anything.
They haven't won since 1991. They literally have not won in my lifetime.
Ah, Mike. What is... you know what? As a Toyota fan, I'm probably just a homer, but that fills my heart for some reason.
Brilliant. I'm glad I could fill your heart with something.
Watch Toyota literally, like, that Sebring's the first race they lose.
Oh, that would be brilliant. I can't wait.
No, I just did it. I just jinxed it.
Commentator's curse, except who would listen to this? Who would listen to this? If you would
all
listen
the way to this,
this
point.
Yeah, exactly. We're just kind of real at this point.
Wait, okay. Well, yeah, as we close, because you can hear the music trailing off the background, right? You know, like, it's already starting. But I think Sebring would probably be the one race where if Rebellion or SMP is going to win, it would be from the Toyotas having mechanical failures due to the track or something like that.
It's going to be 2011 all over again. Lower class car wins overall. Just who wants to be the Porsche Spider is the question.
Or 2011 was the...
The Peugeot, sorry. 2008. Whichever year the Spider won.
I think that was 2008.
What I meant, not what I said. Come on, Cookie. We've been doing this for four years.
Well, we're being technical here, all right? This is well, you know, I got to push further on my nose to correct you whenever possible here. So, but
exactly,
yeah,
right.
No, I would love to see that, honestly, as a Toyota fan. So,
Am I a Toyota fan? You're pretty conflicting information right now.
I'm a huge underdog fan that basically now has to.
How have you survived this season so far? You've basically gone from cheering on the underdog to cheering on the outright favorite, the overwhelming favorite.
Right.
Do you just feel wrong? Do you feel dirty? Do you have to take a shower every time you watch a race?
Well, and then at the same time, I'm like having to defend the ACI and FIA all the time, even though I'm like shit talking them constantly. It's like, it's this weird juxtaposition where it's like, yes, they need to be called out, but the things you're calling them out for are retarded or like they're dumb. I don't know. Like they're not viable excuses for a reason why to hate this individual, like hate them because they made this dumb regulation or they missed, not because like they're taking money from like dark chambers in an underground layer and like intentionally going like, all right, how are the American fans going to hate us more? Oh, I know, let's take this money bag from good old Peugeot. Like, no, that's not how this stuff works. So that's what I have. Anyway, in conclusion, everything sucks, and Toyota rules.
And on that note, I guess it's time to end the show. Just a quick final thing to finish up. I will be going through the backlog of episodes I have saved from the first part of season 3 and hopefully early to mid season 2 as well of Endurance Chat and uploading them to our new host over the course of February when things are a bit more quiet in the sports car world. So don't freak out if you get a bunch of notifications. They will be just old episodes. You can listen to them if you want and see how crap the we once were and how crap we still are. Thank you very much for joining me, Cookie, on our first episode of season 4. I hope it's been as wondrous and exciting as for you as it has for me. Because it feels wondrous and exciting.
I mean, it's the Panametric fam. The lineup consisted of 6 hydrocoptic Marzal veins.
And on that note,
Gazoo!
Peace out. See you next time. Yeah, because you know what he wants to do, Cookie?
What does he want to do?
He wants to share his passion with the world.
What's that? What's that hot, sticky passion? Sports cars?
Ew. Okay, so there's our podcast outro.
We're gonna get in trouble.
Brilliant. And on that note, why did I decide this was a good idea again?
That's good. Well, you know, we just have to look. It's season. It's episode 1. You have to draw them in with a little bit of honesty, a little bit of hominess, a little bit of camaraderie. You got to feel like we're just having a nice Nice chat about sports, guys.